Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Show. I'm Noah Evans, and on this show, I'm going to creatively break down real estate deals with top investors across the country to help you become closer to achieving financial freedom. Alrighty, let's get to it. Brindy, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have you on today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got connected just a week ago by one of my buddies in college. And I was pretty excited to hear about the type of stuff you're into. So you're doing very, very unique stays on short-term rental platforms like Airbnb and VRBO, right?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, awesome. Well, I want to start with what got you into real estate just as an industry. Like, what were you doing before, and what inspired you or gave you enough of a push to want to jump into this?
Yeah, so my husband and I do real estate together. And we started when we were young. We were fresh out of college. Both of us were in corporate America jobs. I was a project manager for a healthcare software company called Epic, and I loved it. Honestly, it was a dream job for a fit for what I wanted to do. But at the same time, it was very demanding. I had to travel 50% of the time. I worked long weeks and long hours all the time. And the reality was I knew I wanted to have kids and I wanted to have more lifestyle balance.
Yeah, of course.
So I knew it wasn't a forever thing. And my husband was similar, that he was in a corporate America job, and we knew we wanted more flexibility, especially with like vacation days. We enjoyed traveling. We wanted a family life. So we started looking into real estate, and we thought it would do like it's something we would do when we retire or whatever. But then we realized, what do we have to lose? We're young. I was 21 and he was 23 when we bought our first property. We were young. We didn't have kids. We didn't have much money. So it was like, well, if we fall, we're just going to end up where we're at right now. So
what do you have to lose? Yeah,
exactly. So we kind of had to change our mindset where real estate investing isn't just for people who are wealthy. You can do it at any phase of life. And we decided to dive in, and we did some education, and we started with regular like long-term rentals. So we bought a duplex that we renovated ourselves, and then lived in one side, rented out the other, and did a little bit of that house hacking. Then we did some more long-term rentals, and then we started flipping houses, and it kind of just grew from there. When we had our first kid, I quit my full-time job, and I was managing more of the real estate while being a stay-at-home mom. And then after a few more years, we got to the point where it replaced both of our income, so my husband could quit his job, and we both dove in. After doing real estate for, I think, 6 years, we did our first vacation rental. And we just fell in love with it. It was a good merge of like house flipping and the creative side, yeah. And then with travel. And so after piloting a couple of vacation rental properties, we went all in on that, and we actually liquidated our full portfolio. We had grown up to 75 rental units, and we're flipping multiple houses a year. We stopped all of that, sold it all, and went all in to our company that we now do full time called Loma Homes. So it's my husband, me, and a business partner, Jeff, that run Loma Homes, and we specialize in extreme vacation rentals and unique experiences through vacation rentals.
That's awesome, man. Okay, so not only did you drop a bunch of value, but you also just shared your story, which was really cool. Normally the value doesn't get dropped that early in the episode, but so there's a couple things that I want to unpack there. You said real estate isn't just for rich people. What do you mean
right.
by that?
I feel like a lot of people think they have to have cash to buy real estate. My husband and I bought our first house and we still had student loans, and we had like saved from our new jobs $10,000 in cash, which I know still can be a hurdle, but we bought a house, we renovated it, we used loans, we used investors, and made it happen as like young, scrappy kids,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah.
And we did that over and over again. So we didn't really start like having very much money for years because we were just reinvesting it all. We were working with private money lenders. If you can find a good deal that's profitable, people will fund it. You don't have to fund it out of pocket yourself.
Man, I love that. How did you find this private money investor?
We started by just networking. We love the National REIA, so the Real Estate Association. And whenever we've moved quite a bit, so every time we move somewhere, we'd plug in and join the local REIA, go to their meetings. There's lots of people there to connect us. We found contractors there. We've found partners. We've found private money investors. So you can do that. You can also like join Facebook groups. And a lot of them come from your network, like just talking to friends and family, mm-hmm. and find out what you're doing. And after you do a couple deals, people find out and they're like, hey, I want to invest with you. And I get a like almost guaranteed flat rate return. That sounds like a good deal to me. So I think just talking and sharing and getting, putting yourself out there is where your opportunities come.
So do you have like a, because your intro there was like perfectly dialed in and it was like a progressive story that built in excitement, and then bam, you hit us with, you sold everything and completely switched into like this new realm of real estate investing. Do you have an elevator pitch that you use when talking to, you know, at a networking event, or you're out and you're forming these new connections? Do you have a quick like 30-second elevator pitch?
I don't have like an official one that's practiced or whatnot. I have been doing real estate for almost 10 years, and my husband and I have done a lot of networking events and conferences. And so I think part of it is we've just had to learn, but I don't have necessarily one that's recited.
So it's just natural.
I should work on that. Well, natural after 10 years of practice.
Yeah.
We were really rocky, especially at the beginning when you feel very intimidated as like the youngest person in the room trying to ask people for money. Yeah. That's hard.
That's definitely
I think
hard.
You learn from putting yourself in those hard situations.
Well, and I think too that it's just like time under pressure, right? It's like you've been in that crock pot pressure cooker of just knowledge and experience and deals and failing forward and trying again and trying again and trying again until all of a sudden you've built up the experience and now you're a well-rounded, well-educated and well-versed investor that people trust. But that happens over time. And I think that a lot of people got to remember that there's no shortcuts to success. You didn't build this empire overnight.
Yeah. And people see us and we're still young. So people will see us and think, man, you just like made it and got a good success or like are killing it. And they don't see the journey that it took to get here and all the times that we like had headaches or midnight phone calls from tenants of problems or whatnot. And so you have to realize it's one step at a time. I mean, we did real estate for 2 years with both of us still working full time, and 4 years until my husband quit. So it took four years for my husband to be able to do full time. And people don't see that. No. They just think all of a sudden we started this.
Isn't that frustrating? Like people are like, oh, you made it overnight. And you're like, no, I didn't. This was a decade.
Yeah. A lot of work and a lot of headache. It's really rewarding if you just keep with it.
Absolutely. There's a quote that I hear pretty often, but I always botch it. But I'll just try to explain the meaning of it. But it's basically like you can choose to do the hard. Life's going to be hard no matter what. You can choose for it to be hard now and do the hard things like showing up to the networking events and putting yourself out there even when it's uncomfortable, or you know, like taking care of your body the right way, eating healthy foods and working out, whatever it is. Or you can choose for it to be easy and you can eat the fast food because it's quick. You can skip the networking events because it's after hours and you just worked an 8-hour day and you're tired. You can not read the extra books because Netflix is more fun. But if you choose for life to be hard up front, you end up in a situation like you're in now where you had the flexibility to shift portfolios and you have, you know, all the time freedom that you have now. And you probably have, you know, all this freedom to be a super present mom, and you guys are probably not limited on financial choices. If you want to go on vacation tomorrow, you can go on vacation tomorrow. But you made that choice up front to do the hard things now rather than do the easy things. Because if you do the easy things now, life will make it hard later.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing that my husband and I consciously chose was to sacrifice now for later. So we actually lived on a college budget, that's what we called it, for years. Like even when we started making money, it was like reinvest it all. Because once you go up, it's hard to go back,
so
right?
Hard.
But
yeah.
If we can, we owned properties, yet we rented for years. Because if we bought a house, we'd be sitting in that equity. Versus if we bought a rental, it's making us money.
Mm-hmm.
So we chose to consciously sacrifice to hopefully get to our goal faster. And so often people are quick to buy the toys or whatever. And the reality is you've got to reinvest in yourself for as long as you can, but still enjoy life along the way too.
Yeah, I agree. I like that you provided both sides to that. I find sometimes I could be a little extreme on sacrifice everything. No enjoyment until you reach the peak of the mountain, but that mountain is always moving. So it was a great point.
And you definitely need to enjoy that journey. Like for us, travel is a big part of it. And, we want to make sure we're consciously not missing out on like our kids growing up and some of those experiences that we can have now. Cause you could just grind forever and then never reach that goal.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah, no, totally. Well, I'd like to jump. Oh, so there's one more thing I want to break down from your intro. You had built up an amazing rental portfolio, I mean, that's larger than most people could probably ever dream of owning, right? And then you decided, you made a huge pivot to sell all of those units and go all in on this unique stay, this extreme vacation rental experience. What was the thought process there? Because it's like, I'm sure that people listening that own rentals are like, man, you spent years building that all up. Why wouldn't you just try to do both? And what was the reasoning in like you wanted to sell and what gave you the confidence to just go for it?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I should give the caveat. We had 75 units in our portfolio. We do have partners on them and we had mortgages on them and whatnot too. So it was good, but it wasn't like, oh, we could retire for life either. Sometimes it even kills us a little bit. It's like, man, that was part of our retirement plan. But the reality is for us, we only could do so much. We were stretched across 6 states with those 75 units. And at the time, we didn't have like a big office of employees mm-hmm. or whatnot. My husband and I were doing the grunt work. We did have, I think, just one employee at the time. And we found ourselves very stressed. We kind of had to reevaluate our life and like, what is it that we want? Because we were dabbling in everything. We had apartments. We had small, like single family. We had duplexes. We had house flips. We were in all these different places. All these different property managers and contractors.
So hard.
That is one of those things where like we were driving ourselves a little nuts. And then we started vacation rentals and we had to realize, okay, we could be good and learn all these different things, or we could be great at one thing. Like we need to focus on what we want and what is our end goal here. Because we could keep doing it that way, but it was stressful. And I think in the end, it actually wouldn't have been as profitable. And if you've ever read the book, The One Thing, that's a really mm-hmm. good one, actually. It talks about how, like, if you focus on one thing, get really good, your efforts are actually better than chasing every shiny corn out there. So that was kind of our thing. If vacation rentals were a good fit for us personality-wise, they actually made more money financially. And it's a new and upcoming market, so timing was good for what we were going into. That for us, we just, after we tested it, because we did do a couple of them first, once we tested it and knew that the model worked, we decided that's what we want to do. It would make our life more streamlined. And in the end, we think it'll be more profitable and fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fun is a huge part of it. And that's a cool point of chasing freedom to reach, right? Is where like you actually get to start making decisions based on what do you want to do and not what's a necessity and what do you have to do.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And for me, that was part of it. I love the creative and the design. And if you've seen our houses, they like we have ones right outside Disney World and you sleep in spaceships and there's mm-hmm. fog machines and there's smoke breathing dragons. And it's just so fun. And I do all the design and the construction management. So for me, the fact that I get to like make the world a little bit more fun and make these awesome memories for families, it was a good fit for me that I really can be passionate and wanted to jump on board with this business.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm very excited to kind of do a deep dive real quick. There's something else I want to tell you after that. You've inspired me on something that I'm going to do on one of my short-term rentals now, which I'm super excited about. But so let's jump into a deal deep dive. And I think that whatever deal you want to share, but one of these awesome extreme short-term rental vacation stays would be a really fun one to dive into.
Yeah. Let's start with our first one on how it got us into vacation rentals. And I think this has some good bigger picture business and real estate lessons, because when we did our first one, it was not meant to be a future business. Our now business partner, Jeff, actually approached us. We were living in his basement because we had, my husband had just quit his full-time job. And at that point we could live wherever we wanted because mm-hmm. we had houses in 5 different states and we no longer had a job that tied us down. So we decided we wanted to move back to Utah where my husband's family is from, but we didn't know where. So we found a month-to-month basement rental while we were looking, and that happened to be Jeff's house.
Wow.
So, so we lived in his basement, right? It's funny how it worked out. So we lived in his basement and we were still renovating and traveling all the time because we were running our real estate business, which was none of it was in Utah, actually. It was all out of state. He approached us and said, hey, his company that he was one of the first members of was selling. So he was getting he was getting funds from that. And so he was looking for somewhere to invest it. And he said, hey, I've done all the research. He's a data geek. And so he's like, I've decided that the best place for me to invest is in Airbnb. That's where I'll get the best return. And I did all this data analysis, and I want to go to this city called Joshua Tree, California. I've never been there, and I haven't really done real estate. So I'm wondering if you guys could make me an Airbnb there, because you guys do stuff out of state. My husband and I are like, where's Joshua Tree? But it doesn't matter. You can learn. We had never heard of the place, but you can learn new markets.
Yeah.
We understood the concept, and we knew how to make it work in the right market. So we said, sure, we'll do it. And 2 weeks later, we drove out to Joshua Tree and started meeting people and market researching. And we thought we would just like flip a normal house into a rental that he could rent out like normal, right?
Yeah.
Well, once we got to know the city, we were like, we got to do something unique. Joshua Tree, if you're familiar with it, is a couple hours from LA. It's in the desert. It's by the like one of the best rock climbing national parks. It's near a bunch of musical festivals and like art festivals. And the vibe is just fun and young and kind of hippie. So we were like, we got to like live up to this vibe. If you look at the Airbnbs that do well are ones that kind of like cater to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can do better than what they even do. So like, let's get creative. So we went from looking at normal houses to figuring out what we could do to stand out. And we ended up buying a dome house on, I think, 5 acres. And Jeff ran statistics, and he knew like the sweet spot for him is that mm-hmm. he needed to sleep 16 people. And there weren't houses that big. So we're like, okay, well, let's make it happen. So this dome house is only 1,000 square feet.
Yeah.
So our solution is let's take old trailers, stick them on the property, gut them, make them into detached bedrooms that are air conditioned and everything, and then hire a local artist to come mural them.
Oh my gosh.
Super hippie and super local, and people love that vibe, and especially when you work with like the local artists and stuff. So we made this like beautiful hippie wonderland that had a bunch of hammocks and outdoor entertainment with all these lights and a pool and a hot tub and a fire pit and these trailers and then the dome house. And it did really well. And it was because of the fact that we went all in and did a cool, unique vibe. So what we thought, like at the beginning, that wasn't the plan. We thought, oh, we're just going to do a quick flip and sell it over to him.
Right.
But it merged into that by looking for the opportunity and looking for what is the best investment. So I think that for us, it was a good learning to be open to opportunities and to always be like looking at what other people are doing that's working and figure out how to do it even better. So long story short, it did even better than Jeff was expecting. So he came back to us and was like, hey, let's do it again. Let's make a business out of it. So then we tried it in Orlando, and we launched 12 Parsecs, which is a galaxy themed house right near Disney World. And that went well. And after that one, Jeff quit his full-time job. Kyle and I sold everything, and all three of us went all in and made it a full-time business.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool. You know, so the first one you did is pretty inspiring to see how creative you were able to get. And you saw that, you know, Jeff had done the research and said, hey, we got to be at 16. We got to be able to sleep 16 people here. And then who rehabbed those trailers for you? Because I have rehabbed a 1965 Airstream land yacht, and it did not turn out how I wanted it to. So I'm super curious on how you got, is it just a local GC that had some experience, or how did that go?
Yeah, we always work with local GCs and contractors. So I manage remotely and I do pick out all the designs and stuff, but I'm not actually there doing the work myself. I'll sometimes like paint accent walls or things that are decorative, but we don't actually do the work, we hire it. That's the whole process of just interviewing and finding someone who's a good fit for your project. And you win some, you lose some. Contractors are hard. That's one of the hardest part of our business is finding good ones to work with. So I think it just worked out that the general contractor we worked with like saw our vision and jumped mm-hmm. on board, and they did a really good job.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. I haven't seen that one. Now I'm kind of excited to go see those trailers. Actually, you know what we should do is we do a little bit of marketing for the episodes. This episode, if you don't mind sharing a picture of that, we can post that and say, hey, you want to come learn how Brindy did this? Tune into the episode. I think that's like pretty eye catching. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd love to share. We actually don't own it anymore. We sold it.
You sold it?
Yeah, California is just not a super investor friendly place to be. So we made a decision to not invest there anymore. But it was doing well, and it is a cool house. So I'd love to. Yeah, I can definitely share photos, but you won't find it on our website since we no longer rent it out.
That makes sense. Probably why I didn't see it. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm curious on the financing aspect of that, because how did that work? Did Jeff just have cash and you guys were able to, I mean, maybe he was able to get financing on the dome tent and the land, but how did the financing work for it?
Yeah, so the way that we set it up is that he hired us essentially it's almost like a pre-purchased house.
Mm-hmm.
So this into the house. So we used a hard money lender, and then that paid for construction and everything. And once it was all the way finished, we sold it at the finished price to Jeff. And so that made it better for Jeff, because it's hard to refinance it at that point, but it's easier for Jeff to just buy it from a seller at a price that we can justify, showing what the rental income it'd bring in, showing that now has these trailers and the land and stuff, that he was able to buy. And we got pre-approved he got pre-approved beforehand. So he just had it as an investment loan, a second home purchase or whatnot.
Yeah.
So that's how it works that way. We have kind of morphed since then. So currently what we do is we do investment funds.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with investors. They buy into or they invest into a specific fund of houses that we're doing for that year. So right now we're raising funds for 7 houses. And so it diversifies there. Investment that they're in multiple cities and multiple properties, and then every quarter we give them payouts, and then we combine that with mortgages. So every one of our properties do have mortgages that we sign on, but we use investor funds for the renovations and the down payment and all that stuff.
Man, that's amazing. That's such a great model, and I feel like it allows you to scale so quickly as well.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
That's cool. So what does the fund look like? So, I mean, if someone wants to invest with you, what type of returns can they expect? How long would their money be out?
Yeah, so we do up to a 5-year. It just depends when we liquidate. Our goal is to grow portfolios and then sell them as we're growing the business. So it's not like a forever investment for an investor. It's good that they have a light at the end of the tunnel. And we do a 5% preferred return plus a 50-50 profit split. And that we project that in the end, that'll be about a 10% ROI. And then, my partner does most of it. I think we're 17% IRR because at the back end, because we're adding value in the renovations and in all the, rental income, you make a good portion at the sell of the property. Mm-hmm. So overall you're looking in the teens for an IRR, and there's a lot of upside potential too, that it could be higher than that. Vacation rentals are kind of a newer market as far as it goes with property valuations and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you sold a portfolio of these short-term rentals to a hedge fund yet, or?
We have not, but we're actually in the talks of doing that now.
Really?
And that'll be our first one. And if that's the case, it's awesome. And that's where the upside comes in. So we do our projections based on if they're just residential rates.
Yeah.
If you sold the house one off, because then it's just based on comps. There's not really a way to sell one vacation rental as a business. But if you have a portfolio, you can sell them at cap rates. And that can just increase, especially in our case where our houses perform significantly better than other regular rentals or even other vacation rentals, that there's a lot of value in the revenue it brings in. So putting that cap rate valuation could even double the value of your house, which is awesome. And that's where our investors would really make money. If it works out like that, that teens gets much higher than that for your return.
Yeah. And then, when you're talking about the, you're basically saying that your properties become comps for each other, right? So it's like, hey, this rental's performing here. Or you're saying, as an entire platform, all the units on Airbnb, and you go get comps from them. And then that's how you're getting your valuations.
So we've never sold any properties. So our properties are not, comps, except for, I shouldn't say that. We sold the one in California, or two in California. We haven't sold anywhere we're investing currently. So we don't have comps based on our own properties, and we plan to sell them as a whole bundle. So like you said, the hedge fund, we'll sell 15 properties or 50 properties as a bundle to a hedge fund. And the way that they value it is not based on appraisals. Instead, they look at how much revenue you're bringing in, and they give you a cap rate, almost like they're buying it as a commercial property or as a business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where on our side, the value matters a lot and increases a lot because we can add revenue. We can do things like make it a unique stay that now our property can be worth double the house next door because our property brings in double the revenue of the house next
door. Right. What are some of the other things that someone getting into their first Airbnb or maybe their 10th can do to kind of add that revenue or pad that revenue like you're talking about?
I think the biggest thing is doing your data analytics and just looking at what other properties are doing that are performing well. Mm-hmm. So we use a couple different platforms. Price Labs and AirDNA are both good ones to see top performing vacation rentals in your area. And we look for trends. Jeff, our partner, who's our data geek, he does all kinds of cool analytics that are like out of my league. But the idea is that you're looking for what are the top properties doing? So if you look at the top 10%, for example, in Panama City Beach and Destin area where we invest, if you look at the top properties, they're larger properties and they have pools and they are designed beautifully or whatnot. So we look and we say, okay, these are the things we need to be in that top 10%. And then we implement it. And it's not going to be the same in every market. Like in the Disney World market where we're at, the like spaceships and the trains and the dinosaurs do really well because people go there for theme parks. If I stick dinosaurs in a house that's at the beach, it probably isn't going to warrant the same return because people aren't necessarily looking for dinosaurs around the beach vacation. When they go to the beach vacation, it's the location. And it's that they feel beautiful and like the renovation is done nice and it's designed well and it's the right space for the group that they're going with. So you just really need to dive into what your market is. Like the hippie wonderland works really well in Joshua Tree. So get to know what the tourists want in the location you're located and then build that for them. Keep in mind what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. And then one of the things you and I talked about previously, it made me question what I was doing with some of my short-term rentals because we have two single-family houses that are like right next to each other and then the Airstream behind all of that. We have them all as separate listings. And I think your suggestion to me was to possibly do a listing to list them all together. And then, I mean, at that point it would sleep, man, 12, 8, what is that? That's 20. And then probably 3 in the, or 4, in the, I would say 3 comfortably in the Airstream. So yeah, I'm looking at it, the property would sleep 23 people and it's on an acre. So it's like, wow, yep. I'm very interested to see what that looks like. I actually sent a text off to our short-term rental managers and asked them what it would look like to get that listing up. And we're trying to work out the kinks of like making sure that if that gets booked, that's the priority. Because obviously the price tag on that would be way higher versus the individual bookings on each individual thing. Well, we'll work through the kinks and figure that out. But
yeah, generally, if you can nest, it's worth it. So nesting is when you put multiple properties together. And it also, you can still list multiple ways. You can list the one property by itself, or you can list the two properties together. And if you can nest it, you're just increasing your revenue because you're putting more opportunities for people to see it. Because if someone's looking for a one bedroom, they see the one bedroom. If they're looking for a five bedroom, now they see it as a five bedroom or whatnot. But you have to keep in mind there's a trade-off. Like a smaller property usually has lower or higher occupancy rates because it's easy for someone to come in and just for a weekend, like a couple staying there. But the daily rates are not the same proportionally to a larger property. So people pay a premium for large properties because there's not as many of them. So interestingly enough, if you nest all those together, you will make more money on that single listing than if you rented them all out separately, which when you think about it, like it seems counterintuitive because you're like, oh, they'd want a discount because they're buying them all at once. But they don't know that you rent these all individually. What they saw was that you as a sleeping 20, is cheaper than the other one that sleeps 20. They aren't taking what you sleep 20 compared to each of these rented individually. People pay a premium for larger properties. So if you have the opportunity to do that, I definitely would do it. It is more seasonal with larger properties. Like summers are a peak time for large properties because groups plan their like summer breaks together or whatnot. So in your case, what I would do to make the priority is I would almost rent it exclusively as a large property during the summertime. And then you can like hedge those non-peak seasons with all the smaller properties because it's really hard to rent a large property unless you're in a big destination like Orlando where people travel year round. But most of the time it's hard to rent a large property on the off-peak seasons because you're not having large groups. So if you can find a way to do both large and small property nested together, you're capitalizing on both sides and it's a really good investment.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to try it. Now, maybe we'll have to have you come back on for like a little bonus segment of the show. Be like, hey, update. I listened to Brindy's advice. You know, we 4X'd our revenue during the peak season. It'd be really cool to see that.
I hope that's the case.
Yeah, we'll have you come back on and we'll do like a little bonus segment. So that'll be really fun. Well, I don't want to run out of time here on the show. We were going to, you know what? Shoot, I just realized we were going to come back to something. Oh, you gave me an idea from our last conversation on what I wanted to do on one of my other short-term rentals. I have this little duplex in like downtown Boise. And I'm sitting there looking at it and it's like, the numbers aren't great, right? It's a $500,000 asset and at almost six. And at best, both sides are going to do $35,000 a year in gross revenue. So, you know, $70,000 total on a $600,000 asset it's okay. It's nothing impressive. In Indianapolis, I have properties that can do $30,000 a year in gross revenue that cost 70 grand. So it's like, you know, I'd much rather invest there. However, when you were talking about creative, like how can I get creative with this property or what else can I do to make it so different from everybody else's that this becomes a priority? You want to book this one before you book something else. They have these massive two-car garages, like oversized two-car garages. And I'm sitting there looking at it. And I'm like, that doesn't provide a lot of value. You can roll up the garage and park your car in it. And it's you have to walk 4 feet less to get inside the house. Okay, that's nice. I definitely enjoy parking in a garage when I go stay at an Airbnb or a short-term rental. But I was sitting there then looking on Pinterest at like things you can put in a warehouse or things you can put in a garage. And I came across a warehouse black light Nerf gun arena. And I was like, wow, this looks super fun. And then I started like trying to price it all out. And I was like, okay, black lights. I'm going to spend maybe like $500 to $1,000 per two-car garage and I can mount them to the ceiling. And then, okay, turf. How much am I going to spend on turf? It's like $4 a square foot for like the nice stuff with the pad. So I was like, okay, the garage is this many square feet. And then to get the little blow-up obstacles and all the Nerf guns was only like another $800 per side. So all in, I'm less than like $2,500 into this thing. And I could potentially have like it outfitted for like a home DIY Nerf gun arena.
Yeah. I think that's creative. And you're really catching on to like one of the key things we focus on is using the space. And even when we didn't do vacation rentals, like if you're doing apartments, utilize all the space you have. Is there a way that you can add income by doing storage unit rentals or whatnot? So the same concept with vacation rentals is what's the best, highest and best use of the space you have? For example, speaking of garages, in our Orlando properties, we turn all of our garages into game rooms. You have to air condition them and insulate or whatnot to make them functional too in a hot location. But if you can have a game room or have that Nerf gun, that just makes you stand out compared to all the other listings because people will remember it when they're scrolling through Airbnb.
Absolutely. So before we move on to the last four questions of the show, I wanted to ask you what some of your other unique stays were. You mentioned the whole Spaceship Galaxy stay. We talked about the first deal. What are some of the other ones?
Yeah, so in Orlando, that's where we do our extreme themed ones. We have the Galaxy House, we have Wizard's Way, which is a wizard house. And then we have Raptor Retreat, which is a dinosaur house. And then we have Once Upon a Castle, which is a medieval castle with the princesses and fairy tales and whatnot. We then have houses that we renovate and they're all different themed over in Panama City Beach and Destin area, but they're not extreme themed. So we don't work with like the theme park contractors like we do in Orlando, but they all are professionally designed. So they're like piratey or sailors or whatnot, that the whole house has a very professional, unique vibe. Cause you don't want to overbuild in a market that doesn't need dinosaurs, but they still stand out. So those four extreme themed are the ones that we have currently.
So, interesting for you to probably to be able to look at the data and compare the two, how much better do your, or do they do better? Do your extreme stays near Orlando do better than the other properties? Those are all in Florida, right? Those other cities you mentioned?
Yes. That's actually a really good question. It's interesting because we anticipated that the extreme themes ones would do significantly better. The reality is with how much more you put into it and all of that, they're almost equivalent.
Really?
The ones we do, and it depends on the specific property, but the returns are pretty similar for our extreme themes and the Panama City Beach. And that's why we do more Panama City Beach houses is because it's more scalable. Doing the themed ones is a ton of work, like building out custom theme park elements that have to fit inside of a house and function for people to live in is a whole beast of itself. However, they're really cool and they build our brand and they're really good marketing for us and they do perform well. So we do them, but we only do one of those at a time versus we can put up five of the other houses, right? At like the same time. So it's a balance of like, we use the theme to add variety to our portfolio to be able to capitalize on another market and to market, use it as marketing for our company, but they don't necessarily make significantly more than the other market. And that being said, it's because we chose very good markets, because our themed houses make double or more of the other houses in Orlando.
Right.
Before Orlando, they kill it, but there's other markets that are better than Orlando. So if you find the right market, you don't necessarily have to do crazy. Like, you don't have to go all out and build spaceships. The number one thing you can do is find the right market, and the profitability doesn't have to be too complex. So like, we don't have to go all in on these beach houses because we found a good market and we buy the right houses that are a good return.
Yeah. And that was actually going to be one of my follow-up questions was, did the Panama City houses possibly perform better just because of their location? But it's like, I don't know. It's like Disneyland's also a massive attraction, but is Disneyland somewhat seasonal? Are the beach houses somewhat seasonal?
The beach houses are very seasonal. Mm-hmm. Orlando's relatively steady. Like the summer's still peak, but you get rentals year round. In the Destin area, it's very seasonal. Like, prime example, we have a 6-bedroom house that can rent and literally make $40,000 in July, but that same house will make $2,000 in January. Like, it is extreme season.
That's super extreme.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to save, but you make like, I don't know the exact number, but probably like 80% of your profits during 4 months of the year or whatnot.
Man.
But it does really well and it's worth it because those 4 months of the year kill it. And that's not the only market, like, and you have to make sure you're buying. And one of our tricks is that we do the renovations for value add because real estate prices are also expensive by the beach. So if I just bought a house that was ready to go, I wouldn't have as good of returns as what we do have. The reason why we can get equivalent returns in both locations is because in both locations, we did our research and we did value add. So we figured out the best way to optimize returns for that specific market.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then that was going to be one of my other questions was how do you find those properties? Are you out networking with wholesalers and other agents and investors?
Interestingly, not as much anymore. We've done a little bit of everything from our past, but everything we buy currently has been MLS. Kyle, my husband, is an agent now. Mm-hmm. And even before he was, we just worked with the MLS recently. We did do wholesaling more and we flipped houses. Part of it, honestly, is the fact that we are not local to the markets that we live in. So it makes it very hard to do a lot of that networking to find the local deals.
Yeah.
And that's something that we probably are missing out on. So you should use that opportunity and we could definitely explore it more in the future. But if you put in enough offers and you look hard enough, even the MLS, you can find deals. And the reality is you get creative. So like we'll buy the duplex that's falling apart. For example, right now we are renovating a house that was a duplex and it was lipstick on a pig, ugly house that someone paint carpeted. And it's 2-bedroom each side, but it's a block from the beach. We're putting $350,000 into renovations to turn it into a 9-bedroom house. So,
you're going to go the other way from duplex to a house.
Yeah. Because in vacation rentals, in this case, it's more profitable. So if you look for the opportunities, find the houses that are in the right place and you can turn it into what you want.
Yeah, that's going to be super cool. Man, that makes me challenge my thinking even more on my duplex in downtown Boise. I'm wondering if I should, I want to leave them as individual units for the back-end value for the resale of it. But I'm wondering if I put a pass-through door, like a double door in the garage, because the garage is share wall. The Nerf gun arena could be double the size at that point, and I could put them up like we've talked about on one listing.
You nest them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You'll increase your profits if you can nest them and do it as both a single family and a duplex.
So what do I owe you for this coaching session?
Oh, nothing. It's great to be here.
Okay, cool. Well, let's move on to the last four questions. There's so much more I want to unpack. I'm going to ask one more question just because this has been a really fun episode. So you said the most important thing is picking the right market. What are some of the indications of a good market versus a bad market?
There's two big things to look at. First of all, is you need to know the legal regulations.
Mm-hmm.
That's like black and white, yes and no. Often people would be like, oh, there's tons of tourists here. This is a great place. They buy and then they go put up a vacation rental and then they get shut shut down by the city, and that was a waste of an investment because you're not legally allowed to do it. So number one thing to check is, if you're interested in a market, make sure you're legally allowed to do vacation rentals, because there's a lot of regulations in different places. Mm-hmm. Second thing when you're actually analyzing markets is, we look at profitability, which is the comparison of the price of the home mm-hmm. and the annual revenue it brings in. So we run reports on AirDNA and Price Labs, whatever, to compare those. So look at like the top performing annual revenue, and then compare that to the purchase price. And if you're going to rehab it, the total investment there. We shoot for like a 10% ratio, revenue 15% to 20% of what your upfront cost is.
It cut out the good part. I know. It's like gone. All right. That's this week's episode.
The secret's gone.
We're going to go right back to, you said you were talking about adding in the rehab and looking at your total investment over your return.
Yeah. So the most important thing to do is look at your total investment to return. So for us, we look for a 15 to 20% rule. So your purchase and renovations, the ratio should be 15 to 20% annual to your total investment. So just keep that in mind as a good rule of thumb. And then obviously you dive into the details, but we shoot for that 20.
Can you break that down a little bit more? Can you throw out some numbers? I have my calculator here. I can help.
Yeah, pull out my calculator too.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say a property brings in $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So that would be $100,000 over what is 20%. That needs to be 20% of what your purchase price is. So I'm doing my algebra here. I feel really dumb right now.
I'm actually glad. I'm glad that you're doing it, because I would have messed this up.
So a $500,000 house. That would be your budget. If you see that revenue brings in $100,000 a year, your total budget for purchase and renovating and staging or whatever, getting your upfront cost, would be $500,000. That's a good profitability. And for us, that's assuming you have a mortgage and whatnot on it. So that's our rule of thumb, is that 20%.
Okay. All right. I keep saying last question, but now that you just opened up another door that I need to walk through, what type of financing are you generally lining up on these? Because I know some people, have run into some issues with trying to finance short-term rentals, because it is kind of a newer space.
Yeah. So, we have called every company out there basically, and we have now found a sweet spot. Because it is hard. A lot of banks don't lend on short-term mm-hmm. rentals and whatnot, especially we have unique setups with our funds and whatnot that mm-hmm. We have to have specific requirements. So for us, we utilize a BRRRR strategy right now. So if you're familiar with that, it's the buy, renovate, rent, refinance, and then you do it again. So mm-hmm. that way you can pull out your equity. So we buy everything with a short-term lender who does flips. We really love Fund That Flip. That's one of our current favorites. If you reach out to me, I can hook you up with our favorite rep. And after we renovate it, then we will go and refinance it, because the property is worth more and we can pull our money out. So we refinance it right now with a company called Vizio. They are a long-term mortgage company that specializes in vacation rentals. So they'll actually like look at your debt service coverage ratio with vacation rental income, not just regular rent. Oh my gosh.
That's
a game changer.
That's huge. So we did the same thing. We flipped, renovated, went to go do the refi. But the issue was we needed to do refis with normal rental rates in Boise, not short-term yep. rental rates in Boise. And so they never met. I mean, our purchase price is so expensive out here. Our average house is $500,000 or $600,000 at this point. And on a $2,000 a month normal long-term
rental, it's never going
to
cover.
They don't pencil. So then they yep. end up wanting me to do, 50% or 60% loan to value. And I'm like, guys, I'm good at flipping, but I'm not that good. I don't create that much equity in these deals. So,
yeah, for sure. And they're like, we've tested lots of different ones. These two are the current ones that we really like. Like I said, I'm sure my email will be linked in here. If you want to email me, I can hook you up with our reps on either of them, but they're good. And so that's what we do, is we refinance it, pull the money out, and then we have more money to buy more investments.
Absolutely.
So we recycle as much as we can.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, I have to stop myself. I mean, there's like six more questions, but we got to unfortunately end the episode here. So, okay. So these are the same four questions we like to ask all our guests. I'm going to put a little spin on the last one for you. But the first one I have for you is, if you lost it all today, what would you do to get it back?
I feel like we started from the ground with not a lot of money. So I do it very similar to mm-hmm. how we did it the first time. It just probably would be faster because we've done it before. I, at this point with my knowledge, I would start with vacation rentals and I would find private investors and just start with one property and then do the next one and work with people who have funds to create that portfolio and just grow it until you can make money.
I think you made that so simple that I would guess that there's going to be people that hear that and then go take this action and go do it. Cause you really, that inspires confidence. That was awesome. All right. So what next one, what's your idea of chasing freedom?
For me, freedom is about having control of my time and what I do. And this is a hard balance even now of doing what I want, cause creating a business takes time, but, I want to be able to travel when I want, be able to be home with my kids and go to soccer games and to do whatever I want without having to respond to someone and have like a 9-to-5. And that's why we do what we do, is because we have more control of our schedule and our life.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think, it's all, a lot of the times the answers are pretty similar, because ultimately most of us just want choice. Like, we want to be able to control our day and control who we're with and when. So I like that. Okay. The next one, I like to add this one just to bring some positivity to the show, but I like to say, what three things are you the most grateful for?
I am most grateful for, first of all, my husband. Like, in life, I chose a good one and we were young. So it's crazy that we lucked out and
That's
got a good
awesome.
One.
Yeah.
and not only is it good for life, but also like good in business. And we really are involved in each other's life through everything. Second would be for my kids. I have a 4 and 7-year-old and they make life more exciting, sometimes more challenging, but would never have it any other way. And then the third one, man, there's so many. I'm going to go outside of people, because you could just go for people and family all day. The third one I'd say is for experiences and adventure. And that's kind of what our business even modeled around, because I put very high value on living life to the fullest, experience different cultures, experiencing different parts of life and how people live and traveling and having fun and enjoying it. So I think that's the third one, is just experiences. And being able to like live life to the fullest.
Is that like a core value in your company?
Our slogan is "Don't just stay, experience."
I love that. Okay, so I was pretty spot on. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. All right, my final question for you: what do you wish people understood more about short-term rentals?
I think they should understand how much more profitable they are. Mm-hmm. I think that. Sometimes they get a bad rep because they do come with more headaches. Like, you might have a tenant that throws a party or something, but it's worth it. Even taking into account those expenses and the property management that's more expensive and whatnot, is I think that people are often scared to do it, but they don't realize that even though there's more headaches, there's more money to go along with it and it'll cover those expenses.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the one thing I'd like to add to that is that the difference between like short-term rentals, and maybe you disagree because your systems are probably better than mine, but the difference for me between short-term rentals and long-term rentals and their income amounts is that long-term rentals feel a little bit more passive, whereas short-term rentals are a little bit more active. So because the element of your time gets put back into the deal, you can multiply your revenue. I look at it as the same as like a normal long-term rental, like a bigger commercial asset, like a 40 unit apartment complex, right? Okay, great. Yep. That income's probably pretty decent, but and you can pass the entire thing off to a property manager for less than 10% a month, usually, of your revenue. Great. There's your check every month. Versus like an RV park. An RV park is usually like 4x the normal 40 unit or the normal apartment complex, if you're comparing them size-wise or whatever. But it's active. It's the same thing as the short-term rentals. You got to work inside that RV park, or someone else has to, which is an additional expense. But still, the revenue's higher, but it's active versus passive. I don't know. Maybe you disagree with that.
No, I agree. I would first of all say there's no such thing as a passive investment. If I've learned anything, every investment has headaches and work. But there is a big difference of the amount of work that you put in a vacation rental versus a long-term rental. But it does pay off.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm very much interested in moving more into the short-term rental space. I've made a lot of mistakes this last year with mine, learned a ton of what not to do. Hopefully in 2022, I can go learn what to do. And I think your advice is going to be a huge help. I'm excited to have you come back on in a couple months and we'll do an update. It'll be really fun.
Yeah, I would love to.
That'd be fun. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, guys. If you guys want to get a hold of Brindy, what's the best way for the guests to reach out to you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me at brindy@loma-homes.com. You can email me. We have an Instagram that's at Loma Homes. We also just launched a coaching course for Airbnbs. It's awesome. Called Loma Vacation Academy. So we're doing beta testing and it's discounted right now. So definitely check that out. And then, yeah, shoot me an email if you have any questions or want to get in touch.
Cool. Awesome. I'm sure you'll have some people reach out to you. We'll also post, you know, your address, your home address, so they can just come by and say hello.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
that'd be great. So,
okay. We'll have you over for dinner.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on. And guys, thanks for tuning into this week's episode with, I messed it up. Thanks for tuning in this week's episode. All right. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, you guys. For more awesome real estate content, you can check out my Instagram. It's just NoahEvans_real estate. It'll also be in the show notes. If you want to reach out to the guest, their contact information and websites and however else to get a hold of them will also be in the show notes. All of our podcast episodes get thrown up to YouTube. And for more awesome exclusive content, please go check out the website. We'll have that link in the show notes below as well. All right. Peace.